Hi, and welcome back to another episode here on Authentic Spoon Nutrition. I'm your host, Tess Keatley, an accredited practicing dietitian. This podcast is for anyone who's interested in learning about nutrition, business for health professionals, and also this year I'm having authentic conversations with people who really inspire me. Before I get into today's episode, I would just like to give a trigger warning that in this episode we do talk about very sensitive and vulnerable topics surrounding mental health. So today I'm interviewing my good friend Josh Sherwell. Now this is a very impromptu podcast. We were having a chat the other day about nutrition and Josh's mental health, and then we just decided to record a podcast. So I apologize in advance if it's a little bit all over the place, but it's just a very honest and open conversation that we were having. Also, full disclaimer, Josh will be speaking about his own personal journey with mental health and the struggles that he's faced. From a personal perspective, Josh is not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and I will be speaking on behalf of my own accreditation as a dietitian. I am not a psychologist, I am not a psychiatrist, so I'm just going to be speaking within my scope of practice as a dietitian. We're going to be talking a little bit about obviously Josh's journey, as well as how nutrition can impact our mental health. This podcast is very raw. We get very vulnerable speaking about both of our experiences with mental health, and we really want to be able to make a positive impact for anyone else who is currently experiencing mental health. We hope that by sharing this, we can inspire or encourage people to reach out for the help that they need. So welcome, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So do you want to start off by telling the listeners a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what you enjoy?
So, 27 years old. I've lived on the Sunshine Coast my whole life.
And Josh and I have known each other probably about, I'd say since we were like 13, 14, I think.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah. We've stayed in contact over the years. Josh actually lived with Zach and I.
Authentic label.
Yeah. So if you follow my Instagram, you probably will remember Josh. He was the authentic label. Him and Zach had a fun time eating KFC sometimes, but today we're actually going to be speaking about Josh's journey and some of his struggles that he's faced with mental health, and we're going to be talking a little bit about how nutrition can really help with mental health as well. Josh, what inspired you to, you know, do this podcast with me?
Well, from the age of 15, I realised that I didn't feel normal, I guess you could say. Growing up, there was a lot of external pressures, being the son of Robbie, and I sort of took it on with a bit of arrogance, but there was an underlying issue where I felt I didn't quite fit in. I suffered a lot with rejection, as most people do, but there was a lot of times where there was a suffering there that I couldn't put a finger on, and I couldn't understand why I was feeling a certain way. I went to a doctor from a young age. They said to me, you know, you've just got a high testosterone level, don't think anything of it. And yeah, for me, mental health sort of, as I grew up and matured into a young adult, went through my late teen years into my early 20s, I still always felt this subconscious feeling of not being 100% here in the present. I'd always dwell in the past, or I'd overthink things, and it led to, at some stages when I was in the age of like 16 through to about 18, self-harm, suicidal thoughts, this is actually really hard to talk about.
Yeah, we can pause if you need
to. No, it's all right. It's all right.
I'm really proud of you for opening up about this, because there is a lot of people out there who are feeling these thoughts and sometimes can't even find the words to express it. So I think what you're doing is amazing.
So for me, like, at the age of... it was late in my 15th year, 2000, I can't remember the year, so I'm getting really nervous right now. There was one night in particular where I was having very, very dark thoughts. There was no reason behind it. There was no heartbreak. There was no external factors like a tragedy or grief, but there was this one night that I was ready to take my own life, and I was the only one home. And the phone rang, home phone rang, back then when we had one. And it was my auntie, Kari, who unfortunately passed away a year later. But we had a bit of a chat, and I was in tears, and she sort of helped me come back to reality. And from that point, I sought, support from my family, more so from her and her partner, Alan, who also passed away. And then over the years that passed from that point onwards, they passed. I'm so sorry, you're going to have to pause it, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. We can take a break.
So after they passed, I obviously went through a stage of grief. And as I got older, again, I still started to feel, without their support, my mental state teetering on the edge. Obviously started drinking alcohol and trying to fit in with my friendship group at the time, which I looked at them as my best friends, friends which you are mutual friends of as well. But again, I never quite felt I fit in. I always felt like, although I was a part of it, I was on the outside. There was only one person in particular in that group, Jeremy Morris, who still to this day has been by my side as my best mate. And we actually live together now. But yeah, it was hard for me because, everyone from the outside looking in would see us and be like, oh, these guys are very confident and outgoing, outspoken. But I was, I think, putting on a mask for so long, trying to be something that I wasn't.
And I think that's the thing as well. Like if you grow up and you've obviously got that pressure from your family, obviously, you're well known, you're popular. And also we tend to think a lot about what people think of us. And from the outside, people might look at you and think one thing, but if you're feeling different, that's your own internal thoughts, and how you deal with them is really hard, especially being 14, 15. Like, you don't even know who you are at 14, 15.
Not at all. And I had this constructed idea of who Josh Sherwell was and who I wanted Josh Sherwell to be. And I think over the years, like, especially over the last 6 months, I know I'm jumping ahead, but I'll come back and talk to a few monumental points. But like, I think with everything's going on right now with COVID and isolation and quarantine and stuff for myself, because I tried to flee the country, it gave me so much time to self-reflect and break down who Josh Sherwell really is. And I knew last year, 2019 for me, was really hard. I went to 9 different funerals, two of which were the result of ill mental health. So last year was a very challenging year for me, and I had incredible support. My environment was good, but my mental health was at its worst.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing I really want to say, is that people who suffer with mental disorders, there's a range of different reasons why it can occur, and some of them are out of your control. For example, genetics, and it's not your fault if this happens to you. It's a genetic thing, and sometimes it's fully out of your control. And I just wanted to say that further on, when we talk about, nutrition and how that interferes with mental health, you can be eating the world's healthiest diet and still suffer from depression and anxiety. So if you're listening thinking that something you did has made you like this, it's fully not your fault.
Yeah. Like, I know for myself personally, last year, and this will be the first time I publicly admit it, I was addicted to drugs. I abused alcohol. I was emotionally unavailable to those who needed me the most. And I was very selfish. And it wasn't until I realized the problem that I had with the relationship, I should say, that I had with drugs and alcohol and food, that I realized that I need to make a change. I need to seek help. But it had to start for me from, it had to start with me doing it for me.
Yeah.
Not for me doing it to please others.
Is there a point that, was there like a pivotal moment that made you flip that switch and really understand, I guess, the addiction that you had or the issues that you were having?
Yeah, definitely. Firstly, I think the first moment that I realised that I had a problem that I needed to seek help was when my partner at the time and I were going through a rough patch. And I tried to be as open with her as possible. I've always tried to keep a wall up, in the sense I didn't want to become fully vulnerable to anyone. I guess that's, again, it's a stigmatization for males to, don't be vulnerable, don't let your walls down, you got to keep up this macho act, right? But for me, she kept asking for more information. I'd tell her, and she said, it's not embarrassing to seek help. And she was the one that really helped me go and see the psychologist and seek help. And it didn't fix me. I'm not saying that, everyone's different, everyone's experience with a psychologist is going to be different. Some people aren't going to gel with their psychologist, some people will. I was lucky that I did with mine, but it didn't fix my problem straight away, and don't ever think it's going to fix your problem straight away.
Yeah.
But for me, like, it was a starting point, and then as my year progressed, I still, to be honest, didn't feel a great deal better. I knew to identify when I wasn't feeling well, or when I was going into a depressive state or an anxious state, and tried to learn how to compartmentalize it all. But it wasn't until I went to Canada, because I tried to go away on a, in quotation marks, a soul-searching journey, when really it actually wasn't the best thing for me at all, because I was still in that depressive state. But long story short, I went over and I dealt with a near-death experience, not with myself, but someone else in my immediate group when I was away, and they almost overdosed in my arm. And when that happened, it was like you said, it was a flick of the switch moment where I then realized, hold on, what's my relationship like with drugs? What's my relationship like with alcohol? And is what I'm doing helping me beat and overcome my demons with depression, anxiety? Or am I just self-medicating as a band-aid effect to just cover up how I was actually feeling? And it wasn't until that happened that I did decide that I need to make a change. And I guess, like, coming back to the very first question you asked me, you know, what inspired you to come on this podcast? And that was it, you know.
Yeah.
We need to talk about this. We need to talk about these uncomfortable conversations regarding mental health for men and women, because, yeah, we're at that age where it's very dominant and it's not spoken about enough.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what is amazing about you, Josh, is that obviously we're good friends and I know you well, but you've always been a really good communicator. So when we lived together, I knew something was wrong straight away. We'd talk about it, we'd sit down and we'd talk through it. And you've always been really good at expressing your feelings vocally, but some people can't, you know, as you said earlier, some guys, you know, think that they need to be the big tough guy and men don't cry, all of that. So it's amazing that you are able to communicate with it. And obviously when you got back from Canada, I'm not sure if you said, but you were planning on doing this big trip and then coronavirus happened, so you had to come home. And when you came home, the first time I saw you, I was like, something's happened. Josh is a different person. You really had this different kind of outlook on things, and you were really able to reflect about what was going on. Because obviously when we lived together, I knew that, you know, you were dealing with some things and sometimes probably not making the best choices, but I think that I'm not going to sit here as your friend and be like, you're not allowed to do that. I think people need to realize it for themselves as well. It's the same with nutrition. You know, when clients are like, Tess, can you help me lose weight? But if they're not ready to make that change yet, there's no point me telling them this is what you need to eat. There's like that level of change theory that we use, and you need to be at that point to be like, yep, now I need to make a difference.
Well, think about how many times I would come to you and be like, Tess, I want to lose weight. Like, when I was living here, you know, I was weighing over 100 kilos. I was the heaviest I'd ever been. I was living with a dietitian.
Yeah.
Like, go figure.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, relationship with food at that, like, at that point, living with you guys, I was making some pretty bad decisions.
We were having fun and eating a lot of delicious food, though, at some point.
No, we were. definitely were. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I love food. But, it was just one of those things where you can be, like we said earlier, you can be in the best environment. But really, like you just said, it really comes down to you. You have to decide that you want to make a change. Mm. And there were so many times like, Teske, help me with this. Teske, help me with that. But I'd drive down the road on the way to work and get Hungry Jack's or KFC with Zach or whatever it might be.
Yeah. And Zach wasn't the best influence on you, might I also add. Zach, if you're listening, maybe you might think about making some healthier choices. But yeah, and I guess that really brings us to the topic of today, is nutrition and mental health as well. So just backtracking, so when you got back from Canada, you'd obviously made some few dietary changes when you were in Canada.
Yeah.
And then we sat down and have a chat about, you know, Tess, is this the right way to go about things? And I gave you some advice and, you know, helped you with your meal plan. But what I noticed that was different this time was that you were ready to make that change, you know? So I think that's really important. But I guess generally speaking, as I said earlier, not all mental health can be improved from dietary changes, but there is some research to show that it can help for some people. But in general, most Australians, we don't eat enough of the good stuff and we eat way too much of the bad stuff. Mm. So when I say bad stuff, I'm talking about, you know, fast foods, takeaways, foods that are high in sodium, trans fats, and processed meats. And according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics last year, 2 years ago, only 7% of Australians ate the recommended serves of vegetables, which is quite low. So what we recommend is having at least 5 serves of veggies in a day. Not only is that helpful for preventing things like obesity, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, but what we now know is that there's a really direct link between what we eat and how it affects our mental health and our mood. Would you agree, Josh, that when you started making changes in your diet, you saw some differences? Or?
Oh, hugely. So when I went to Canada, I went there to meet my brother, and he told me that he was vegetarian. I thought he was an absolute idiot because at that point in time, I just loved eating meat. I loved cooking a good steak. But when I went there and changed the way I ate because we had to, or I didn't have to, but I just wanted to.
It was easier.
It was easier just to do that. In saying that, I was still smoking pot every day in Canada because it's legal. Like, drugs over in Canada, it's scary how accessible they are. And I learned that very quickly. I only really touched weed, luckily, over there because I was obviously trying to come off everything. But it got to the point where I was smoking every day and I was eating healthily, but I wasn't losing weight. There was no difference in my mood. My mental health wasn't changing. But it wasn't until I got back, I had that moment over there, and I decided to stop altogether. I got cold turkey, come back, and then I stopped the intake of red meat. Not fully, but I cut back on my red meat intake and meat intake in general to substitute with fish. But I started eating a lot more green vegetables. And like you said before, that sometimes, like, it's not guaranteed that diet's going to change your mental health. But I think making that conscious effort and that decision to go out of your way to go, well, hold on, I'm going to eat the right thing. And by saying that and manifesting, I'm eating the good stuff, like you said, that is going to improve your mental... I believe it's going to improve your mental health anyway, because you're making the conscious effort to break an old habit which didn't fulfill you or make you feel better in the first place. That's how my experience has happened. It's like making your bed in the morning. You make your bed in the morning, you've already accomplished one task of the day. You're taking a step to move forward and do something to better yourself.
Yeah, for sure. And what I picked up on there, and based on, obviously, when I was doing your meal plan and you were telling me what kind of changes you made... And a strategy that I really like with a lot of my clients is it's not about removing lots of foods. It's about adding more of the good stuff, which is what you did. So, yes, obviously, you decreased the amount of red meat that you were having. But what you were doing instead is you were putting in more plant-based foods, more fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts and seeds, all of those really good plant foods. And we'll talk a little bit more about why that is so important for your mental health, in particular fiber. Because fiber is what really drives that good gut bacteria in our gut.
I guess I got a question, Tess, is you said, you know, sometimes diet can't 100% fix mental health or, you know, cure mental health, but surely there'd be studies or tests that link food and certain ways you can eat and certain implementations of your diet that can improve mental health, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I said it doesn't work for everyone, but there is some really great research coming out, especially in the field of nutrition psychiatry, showing that there is a direct link between improvements in mental health. So what we know is that it's not one particular nutrient that is going to help improve mental health. We really look at the diet as a whole, and that's what makes the improvement. So it's not, for example, you know, having more vitamin C and that's going to cure your mental health. We really need to look at it with a holistic approach. So some of the studies that I'm going to talk about today. So, for example, there's a randomized control trial, and one of the authors is Professor Felice Jacka, who she actually founded the Food and Mood Center. So, for any listeners who want to learn a little bit more about food and nutrition, I highly recommend checking out the Food and Mood Center. There's some great resources there. So, what they did in this study, it was called the SMILES trial. And they really wanted to investigate whether certain diet therapies and dietary changes could help treat depression. So what they did was they had two different groups. One group was having support from an individualized dietetic support, nutrition counseling for about 12 weeks, while the other group was having social support. And what we already know is that social support can really help with mental health. So in the social support group, they were either, you know, having conversations, playing board games, doing puzzles and things like that. And what they found was that both of them helped to improve mental health, but the group who was getting individualized nutrition support had significant improvements in their overall mental health compared to the social support group. So from what we know there is that there is definitely that need for nutrition changes to really help support mental health. Some other studies that they're doing at the Food and Mood Center show that, I guess, from a physical aspect of what's happening with your brain, is that people who had ate predominantly a westernized diet, so you think of, you know, a high intake of fast foods, trans fats, sugary beverages, and processed meats, they actually found that people had a smaller hippocampus. So the hippocampus is part of the brain, and it's really responsible for your emotions and learning, and along with other things. So when we think about that, it's actually changing the way that our brain, like the actual structure of our brain. So I guess you are what you eat, and that's really definitely affecting it. So.
And that's interesting, you know, like hearing you say that and like reflecting on my personal experience eating so much junk food over the last couple of years, and, you know, high trans fat diet, sugary beverages, in the sense that the hippocampus, it affects the emotions and the learning capabilities. Like, I've noticed ever since I've stopped, I've been more in tune with my emotions and being able to realize what's going on a lot more to an extent. Not only that, but my capability to learn has improved greatly. And yeah, that's very interesting to hear, because from a personal point of view, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. What we know is that they have done some studies looking at certain particular dietary trends or a specific diet. So one way of eating that has had, you know, significant results is the Mediterranean diet. So the Mediterranean diet is a type of diet that really focuses on whole foods. So think of lots of fruits, lots of veggies, whole grains, nuts and seeds, and then smaller amounts of meat and dairy. And it also has a good focus on healthy fats. So think of monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. So things like olive oil, avocado, nuts and seeds, etc. So, but what they've really found in general is that the most common trends between all of the diets that they've looked at, the one particular nutrient that has significant results is fiber.
Okay.
And this probably might make sense when we started reducing the amount of meat and started implementing more whole foods. So yeah, fiber is so essential. So if you're not sure what fiber is found in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts and seeds, and it's the type of plant foods that we can't really digest. How it's actually working is, it gets pretty complex, and I hope that I can give it justice by explaining this, because it is a bit sciencey, but basically our gut is like our second brain. So you may have heard of the gut-brain axis. Have you heard of that one? So essentially we have this nerve called the vagus nerve, and it runs directly from our gut straight up to our brain, and our gut and our brain can communicate with one another. So like, think of that time, like before a surfing contest, do you ever get like butterflies in your stomach?
100%.
Or the urgency to like use your bowels, go to the bathroom?
I was just about to say before, but when I compete, I know that I wouldn't perform to my best unless I'd gone to the bathroom for a nervous pee.
Yeah, exactly. So that is like your gut brain axis working straight away. So, and what we now know is that the food that we eat directly affects our brain through that process, but through the gut microbiome. So the gut microbiome is made up of trillions of bacteria, and how it works is, this is where it gets complicated. So basically what happens is we start eating food, we begin to digest it in our mouth, it reaches its way into the stomach and then small intestines. The small intestines is where we generally absorb our nutrients. But then when it reaches the large bowel, that's when the fermentation process really starts. So fiber is literally the gut microbiome's preferred fuel source. And without fiber, we don't have a good gut microbiome. So what's happening is the gut bugs start to eat the fiber, start to ferment it, and then it produces something called short chain fatty acids. So these are metabolites, and the metabolites are basically what helps influence our immune system, metabolism, our body weight, and really importantly, our brain health. So without fiber, we aren't having that really good biodiversity of good gut bugs. So if there's anything that you take home from listening to this podcast, it is increase your fiber.
Yeah.
And that's like something that I always used to say to you, right? Is you like, did. Oh, yeah. And you've always been good with your veggies and your fruits.
Yeah, I think like touching on that is when I wasn't eating high fiber foods, there was a lot of the time where my gut didn't feel right.
Mm.
And I'd be sitting there going, well, hold on, the food I'm eating is fine. Like if I was eating a high protein meal, for example, I just noticed that, yeah, I'd feel very uneasy in my gut. But then ever since then, I haven't had that issue since it's been, you know, the high fiber veggies, fruits, like you said, nuts, and then only the smaller portion than meat. So yeah, it makes sense because my gut health has felt a lot better since.
And what can happen is that we can change our gut microbiome really quickly just from producing more plant-based foods as well. So people think that, you know, it'll take years. It really doesn't. It's a matter of weeks before you can change the diversity of your gut microbiome.
Well, it took me... So I've been home now from Canada for 2.5 months. When I got back from Canada, I was still weighing 104 kilograms. And then from changing that, my approach with my food and my like veggies compared to meat ratio, I've gone from 104 kilos down to 86 kilos in 2.5 months.
Yeah.
And that's when I approached you because I was like, this doesn't seem right. I don't think this is healthy.
And I was like, Josh, okay, let's just, you know, it's a little bit fast. So,
But after doing my bloods and getting all the tests done, it shows that I'm fine. Mm-hmm. I can maintain it, which I have since. But yeah, it doesn't take you that long.
Yeah.
But it's just like we said from the beginning, you just got to make that first step.
Yeah. And then being consistent with those steps, you know what I mean? Like, it's so easy to, you know, do a new way of eating for a week and then old habits start to creep back in.
Yep.
It's a little bit harder. But yeah, and they've also found that people who do suffer from depression have kind of altered gut microbes. So they do some crazy studies in animal studies where they put, like, have you heard of fecal transplants in mice? Where they can actually change health states of mice just from changing the gut microbiome in the mouth.
There's one of the band members out of Boyne Bear, I believe, he has to do that.
Oh, wow.
I remember that. They did a story on him on Hack, and he has to do that in order for his gut to process food properly and get enough fiber into his diet. So that's nuts.
It sounds crazy, hey? Like, who would have thought that you'd be transferring someone's feces into someone else's intestine?
Human body's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane how the human body works.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, speaking of like foods that we can try, implement more, like what are the foods we should be looking at for people like myself who do struggle with mental health? Like, are there certain ones that you should be focusing to make sure you get into your body for better gut health that then corresponds to your better mental health?
Yeah, for sure. So, as I mentioned earlier, fiber. Fiber is the preferred food source for our gut bugs. So that's what's making those short chain fatty acids and metabolites like I spoke about earlier. So fiber, again, in fruits, veggies, whole grains, nuts and seeds, really important to incorporate more beans, lentils, legumes, chickpeas, all of those. That's where you're going to be getting all of your fiber. Also, probiotics are really beneficial as well. So I'm not expecting anyone to go out and buy probiotics. You can get probiotic-rich foods in things like sourdough, kefir, and kombucha. Also, what's really important is eating a diverse range of different colored fruits and vegetables. So colors are really important because not only is different types of fruits and vegetables have different nutrition compositions, they also contain polyphenols and antioxidants, which we know are really beneficial for brain health. Prebiotics also. So in a nutshell, prebiotics are essentially what feeds the probiotics. So you need good prebiotics to really drive the probiotics. So onions and garlic. So they're the preferred fuel source for probiotics. Another thing too, which is really cool, like some research coming out lately, is resistant starch. So resistant starch is basically, a quick example, is when you have cooked pasta or rice and then you let it cool, the actual structure of that carbohydrate changes into what we call resistant starch, and it seems to be really beneficial for gut health as well. And then something that's really important as well is looking at omega-3 fatty acids, so oily fish, things like salmon, tuna, herring, as well as olive oil. Olive oil is so essential for brain health. If you're vegetarian, you can get omega-3 fatty acids from things like walnuts and chia seeds and all of like flax seeds and your plant-based sources. So they're the ones that I would really focus on as well. And obviously eating a balanced diet of the other food groups that I didn't speak about. So protein is also good for mental health, all of your amino acids there, as well as dairy, just to think about all of those other things as well, like good bone health, good muscle health. Some of the foods that we want to try and avoid that we know aren't so good for our gut are things like artificial sweeteners. So a lot of those like diet foods have all of those alcohol sugars and things like that. For people who have sensitive guts, they're a little bit more harder to digest. Trans fats, so think of like all of your fast food takeaways, some saturated fats, alcohol, which we know is not so good for our guts. And also sometimes certain medications can interfere with the gut as well, but that is obviously something that you need to speak with your doctor about. But yeah, that's kind of a nutshell of it all.
Can we touch on, with alcohol, I remember when I was living with you, I said to you, you know, like what as a dietitian, where do you see a healthy balance for alcohol in the diet? And I remember you said, well, rather than having 8 beers on a Saturday night with Zach, why don't you have 2 standard drinks?
Yeah.
Of like break it out down to 2 standard drinks of a night, like one night and one sitting and that's it. And I think that's something that we, especially being Australians, we're brought up in this culture where you go out, you get on the piss with the crew, mm-hmm. everyone has a big time. But it obviously, it for a couple of stats, for example, I just did a push-up challenge with Push for Better and Headspace. And they're saying that around 47% of us during our lifetime will suffer, 45% of us during our lifetime will suffer mental ill health, and less than half of us will seek help. And they do also say on Beyond Blue that, you know, depression and anxiety go hand in hand with drug abuse and alcohol. Mm. So like, do you think, I guess a question to you, do you believe that our culture in Australia does also play a role into why those statistics are so high?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like obviously people who are suffering from depression and anxiety, and I personally have had my own issues with depression and anxiety, which we've spoken about, I've seen a psychologist for, but you're almost, sometimes I used to think of it like I used to feel empty sometimes. Mm. So you want to try and fill that void in some way. So that's why you see a lot of people turn to drugs and alcohol to try and either numb those feelings or fill that kind of void.
Mm.
So with alcohol, why it can get dangerous is because it's so easily accessible for us. So obviously it's not illegal to buy, so it's easier for people to kind of fill that void. But in general, the guidelines around alcohol are to have no more than 2 standard drinks per night, and also aim to have 2 alcohol-free days per week. The reason why we do that is because that seems to be, I guess, the guidelines around preventing the risk for developing alcohol-related chronic diseases. But also what it stops is binge drinking. So when you go out on the piss and have a big night and say you have upward of 10 to 15 beers or whatever it is mm-hmm. you have, just think about how much stress that's putting on your liver. You know, that's a lot for your liver. Whereas if you're having, say, 2 drinks, that's a lot less, and it's easier for your liver to metabolize that alcohol. Yeah. So I think definitely if you know that you've got a history of maybe alcohol abuse and mental health, I would be very wary around that to not then develop, you know, you're trying to fill that void from going to alcohol. So
yeah, I guess, and a lot of people like myself, I guess I now look at where I was with my drug abuse and my alcohol abuse as self-medication, right? Like, I didn't know how to deal with what I was going through, so I'd get drunk or I'd get high to to not deal with it, when obviously there are so many other ways, shapes and forms in which you can A, seek help, and then B, implement strategies into your everyday life that are going to improve, that aren't going to be a hindrance to your health in the long run.
So what are you doing now to maintain your good mental health, and what kind of strategies have you implemented?
To be honest, for me, the last few years, like I said earlier in the podcast, have been my hardest in regards to my battle with mental health. And I found that I was always doing things for others.
Mm.
But at the same time, I would also be very selfish in what I do. That doesn't really make sense, but
I see where you're coming from. Like, you as a person, me knowing you, if I need a favor, you're the first person that you'd call. You know what I mean? You're a helper. You know what I mean? Like, you're a giver. You know, you give people a lot in return.
Yeah, and I think so. I guess like where I was at with my mental health back then, I wasn't implementing strategies that I was then able to do those things for those that I care about and people that I, you know, respected. and I didn't do anything to actually help me. There was no strategies for me to help to get through what I was going through. And so now I guess what I've done is, you know, I've taken up learning how to play an instrument. You know, I've slowed down with how much negative news that I consume from a social media point of view. I've deleted Facebook for that exact reason. You know, I've also started doing my own personal research on mental health and trying to learn more about how the human mind works. To be honest, I'm not going to go to uni and study it. I just like to learn through experience. Another thing is exercise. Like, I've changed the way that I exercise. I used to be into my Olympic lifting. I used to be very resistant, weight orientated, you know, that bloody, like we said earlier, it's that macho, masculine persona that we as men, you know, unfortunately fall into quite often. And so now I'm taking more of a holistic approach with my training, a lot more cardio based, a lot more breath exercise, a lot more movement and flexibility. I've just joined up with Exalto Holistic Club down in Kawana with Jordan Potts. And I find that that's a really positive environment from a mental point of view. Not only that, it's also really good for me in regards to my my body and physical health. And I find that I'm trying to put myself into positive environments, because your environment plays such a massive role into your mental health. And at the end of the day, you can change your environment. For so long, I was in, like I said earlier, I was in a good environment, but I didn't know how to realize and respond to how I was feeling. Whereas now that I've changed my diet, I had that moment in Canada, I've now come back and gone, well, I can know what parts of my environment I need to change in order to, so like you said, I can maintain this, you know, steady, I wouldn't say rise, but I can walk through life with depression, address when I'm having a low point, but then keep moving forward knowing that the next day is going to be better.
Yeah.
Whereas last year I wasn't able to do that. And when something bad would happen, I would literally just shut down. I'd shut down. I'd get angry with people. I'd get frustrated with people. I'd get upset. Whereas with now, I'll get upset. Like, geez, I'll cry nearly every day. I'll listen to a song. It'll trigger me with something or provoke something, but that's fine. It's me. It's a release. And I turn around, I get on with the day. I keep moving forward.
Yeah.
So I think like everyone's going to have a different, strategy, or everyone's going to have a different outlet for them to move forward when they have those episodes. And for me, I found it through exercise, changing my environment, and then obviously finding new hobbies that I do feel good about doing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I really like what you said there about, you know, modifying certain aspects of your life. And it does really scare me that obviously we're adults and we can change our environment if we need to, but I just get so worried about all of those children who are in very unhealthy environments who cannot do that. And you know, I read a statistic saying that a lot of mental health issues begin by the age of 14. So
yeah, well, it's funnily enough, like in that challenge that I did, we got sent facts every day from Headspace, and you know, they reckon that over 75% of the total in Australia of mental ill health presents itself before the age of 25. So
that's a big number.
It's huge. It's three quarters of our population that before the age of 25, if mental ill health is going to affect them, it would have presented itself by then. Yeah. And like we said earlier, we've both gone through it. I'm 27. We're the same age. Like I said earlier, I figured out I had a problem when I was 15. And that's just because I didn't feel right.
Yeah, definitely. And from my personal experience, I don't think I've ever actually shared this on Instagram. I've shared it in someone else's podcast that I was on. But so my parents got divorced when I was in grade 8. So I think it was 14. Were we 14 in grade 8? And obviously I went through some really low points in my life. And I've always naturally just been like an anxious person. Like I've always, you know what my personality is like. I'm always like 0 or 100, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you are.
And I do have quite a high energy and I've kind of run on anxiety sometimes. So, but for me, where it got really dark was last year. Obviously this was my grad year. I just graduated. I started a new job and then I did that clinical locum when I was in Harvey Bay. Yep. That's actually when you moved in. And I was working upward of like 60-hour work weeks and I wasn't taking time for me. I wasn't exercising. I was making poor nutrition choices. I was working in emergency and seeing some really complex cases. And, you know, I was just in a really bad space. And I came home one weekend and I had 3 days off and I didn't leave the house and I was just an absolute mess. Mum came over with Zach and they were like, okay, you need help. Mum gave me some psychologist cards and she was like, you need to find one. And I don't know what it was. I was always so, like, I never wanted to go see a psychologist. No. I don't know what it was. I was just like, pride. I don't need to talk to anyone. I know what I'm doing, but I actually didn't. And then I found a psychologist and went to see her. And it was, for me, what I struggled with was, obviously I had a lot on my plate and I didn't know how to deal with that stress and that pressure. And me talking to her was amazing. I think I only saw her about 5 times max, but I guess I had this like idea in my head of what seeing a psychologist was like, but she just helped me implement strategies in my life that I could do to help with my mental health. So for example, the best way I can explain it is my brain is like a computer and I have 100 tabs open. So her thing was like, close a tab. Every day, close a tab. So don't try and do all of it at once because I'm like a helicopter. I just flip around and do start something. So I need to close tabs before I start something else. And yeah, she gave me some really cool like breathing exercises. And yeah, I was like listening to, for me, what really helps is listening to like podcasts or learning about things like, I like drawing, exercising, all of those things. And I know too, if I'm not in a good headspace, I'm not eating good, and that makes it even worse. So
and then it just snowballs the next thing to the next thing, and unless you can pull yourself out of it, you just fall down this really slippery slope. And just to quickly touch on for anyone that's listening and they are going through, you know, a really difficult time with their mental health and they're, you know, and you haven't sought out help, go to your GP because the Australian government has implemented this thing where you can actually go and get six consults with a psychologist to sit down and talk about these things. So the government is slowly trying to implement things for us as young adults, not only young adults, but we as Australians and we as people to get help because it can be, you know, it's daunting. Like you just said, like you felt like you didn't need help. I certainly didn't feel like I needed help because I dealt with it for so many years by myself. But because, the level of grief that I was dealing with over the last year and my partner told me, she just told me it's not, like I said, it's not embarrassing to seek help. So anyone listening that's, you know, you're afraid of what your friends are going to think, you're afraid of what your parents are going to think, like it doesn't fucking matter.
It's the best thing I ever did. Yeah. I don't know why I put it off for so long. Are you talking about the mental health care plan?
Yeah, that's the one. Mental health care plan.
I did that. Yeah, it's great. It subsidizes a lot of your visits, so it's a lot cheaper because obviously it's not cheap going to see a psychologist. But yeah, and there's also really great resources that you can find. Like as I mentioned, Food and Mood Center has some good resources. Beyond Blue, you can find them www.beyondblue.org.au. There's some other ones like Lifeline.
Headspace.
Yeah.
Headspace Australia's got some good resources. Yeah, it's one of those things, like there's so many resources for mental health. I just think we as Australians don't want to swallow that pill to go, I need help.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of stigma around it where we as Aussies are like, nah, we're fine, we can get through this. But there are a lot of resources that all you need to do is jump on Google and look. Like, you jump on the Beyond Blue site, and I wish I had done it last year. I wish I had jumped on Beyond Blue site and researched mental health a lot sooner because when I read through there, you know, they talk about the relationships of drug and alcohol and depression and anxiety, and I read through it going, whoa, you know, I wish I had known this 6-12 months ago because it would have been able to change the way it would have been able to change how I was during my relationship, would have been able to change how I was in my workplace. So yeah, it's all at our fingertips. We've just got to take that first step. To
the first step is the hardest, and that's what I say to my clients who reach out for nutrition support. Like even them making that first appointment, they've already won the race by making that first step 100%. To self-improvement. So we've obviously spoken about a lot of sensitive things today. And Josh, you've obviously shared a lot of deep and obviously authentic conversations. And for the listeners, I feel like you've only shared a little bit of, I guess, the downsides to you and who you are. So tell us a little bit about what's good about Josh Sherwell. What type of person are you? You've obviously shared the dark
side. Yeah, so to be honest, in the dark side of me, I was a very self-centered, person who I cared so much what other people thought about me that I'd always put on a persona. But now
the good things about Josh Earl is I'm so appreciative and grateful for the support network that I have. You know, I'm trying now to be as selfless as possible because, you know, the people that have supported me through hard times, you got to realize that you could be going through hard things, but there's also everyone else is going through their own shit.
Mm.
And you've got to be able to put that time aside for the other person because you need to make sure that they're all right because we're all going through struggles. So for me, yeah, the things that's changed me, I am happy. Don't get me wrong. Like right now, I'm probably the happiest I've been in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I still have my regrets. I still have my shit days. Like yesterday I was at work, had a great day at work, and then all of a sudden, suicidal thoughts came into my mind. I turned around and said to myself out loud, why the fuck do I feel like this?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I feel like that? But by addressing it, I came out of it. So that's another thing. I've been able to change the way I look at mental health and change the way that I feel about my mental health and the way I feel about myself. You know, positive self-image and the way you look and feel about yourself, you've got to start by looking in the mirror being accepting of who you see.
Yeah, exactly.
And so like, I've gone and shaved my head, bleached it white, pierced my ears. I've changed. I wanted to reinvent myself because of who I didn't like last year.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I think for me, like, I love surfing with my mates.
Bob Ross.
I love Bob Ross. If anyone doesn't know who Bob Ross is, Google Bob Ross, get a canvas, get some paints, get your friends over, bottle of red wine, I'll tell you what, you have the best night of your life. I think for me as well, my family is massive, plays a massive role in my life. Don't get me wrong, my family's not perfect. We have arguments all the time, but some of my closest friends are my cousins. You know, I work with my cousin Jay, who I have for the past 5 years, who I've looked up to, I'm best friends with. My cousin Khan, Connor, Clay, you know, my whole family is just, I'm just very grateful to have a support network like them.
And for anyone listening, the Sherwells are probably one of the biggest families after mine here on the Sunshine Coast. We both come from very big families, so.
We do.
Yeah.
And we're very lucky though to have them.
Yeah, for sure. Josh, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and being really vulnerable and really talking about some issues that were really hard for you. I know how hard it was for you to open up about this. And I just really hope that someone listening who has gone through this, who is going through this, feels supported and feels like they're not alone in this, some of these dark days, and that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm not saying that if you reach out, you're going to be fixed instantly, but it's a journey, it's a process, and making that first step is the hardest. So I want to thank you so much, Josh, for sharing those intricate details of your experience. So,
and I just want to say as well, like, I'm so grateful for everything you and Zach have done in regards to support, and I'm so grateful to have you both in my life, and I really admire what you're doing and the fact that you're trying to be as transparent with everyone as possible in regards to the dietitian world and how you can improve yourself. And I think what you're doing, I think the work you're doing is great.
Oh, thanks, Josh.